goals. A journey into a world that is just beyond our comprehension. The world of the paranormal.
Welcome to the 13 Skulls. I'm your host, TJ. In this episode, we'll be taking a look at the Mackenzie Poltergeist, a Roman village unearthed in London. Two 12-year-olds encounter Bigfoot in Tennessee, a new Loch Ness monster sighting, the undead that saved Christmas, and a monument to a perished alien may be created in a Ukrainian town. That and a lot more in this 50th episode of the 13 Skulls. Welcome to the 50th episode of the 13 Skulls. Guys, I really appreciate you coming out and taking a listen to the show. We've got a lot of stuff to cover, so let's go ahead and get the formalities buried in the dirt and out of the way. If you have any experiences or feedback you want to share, email me at the13skulls@gmail.com or info@the13skulls.com. Or if you want to call me, you know, I got a couple of numbers that you can call. It's 206-338-2205. or 817-986-0019. As always, there's going to be a lot of UFO sightings from ufoclearinghouse.webs.com that I will link to in the show notes at the13skulls.com, so go check them out. If you like the music in the show, it's courtesy of the IOTA Promonet at www.iotaalliance.com. I will post up links to them if you want to download them. There will also be links there if you want to buy the entire album. I will provide links to everything you hear about in the show notes for this episode. And the original logo was designed by Anthony at RAM Promos. If you need any graphic design assistance at all, please contact him. He's a really good graphic designer, and I think you'll be happy with the work that you'll get from him. It's RAMPROMOS@AOL.com. That's RAMPROMOS@AOL.com. If you have a podcast and you want to swap promos, or if you want yours played in the show, send it my way. I'd love to be able to maybe drive some listeners your way. Also, I want to hear from you guys. Do you have something in your area you want to talk about? Something strange? You know, do you live near a haunted location? Let me know about it. Record it, call it in, write it in an email, anything you want. I'd love to hear what you have to say, the experiences you've had, the places you live near. I want to have a little bit more listener interaction with the show. So if you want, email me, call me, write it in, record it, something. I'd love to hear it. So let's go ahead and get on with the show. All right, well, the first thing that I wanted to do was take a look at a couple of emails that I got. The first one was from Rogan. He sent me in just a little case of what I like to think of as synchronicity. It's just a bit strange, because if you know anything about Scott Sigler, he wrote a series of books, Infected, Contagious, and he's going to have Pandemic coming out in the next few years to cap off that trilogy. And it all takes place, well, it takes place everywhere, but it basically takes place in Detroit. And, well, Rogan lives in Detroit, and he had a weird case of synchronicity because something happened to him. He was listening to Contagious, and he got to a part where in the book, it was in the same place that he was. He says he's been working more hours lately, so he's been doing more driving. He said he finally got around to finishing off Infected and started listening to Contagious. And last Sunday, while he was working, he pulled off the road to take a lunch break and finish some paperwork. He went and got some food, pulled down the road a little bit, and started to eat his lunch at a place called Meyer's Parking Lot. Anyways, he said he was eating lunch, filling out the paperwork that he had to do, and was listening to Contagious. He said he got to about chapter 10, and the part comes up where Perry Dalsey, the main character in these books, and another character that was referred to in the books as Fatty Patty, where they had caught their seeds. Now, if you know anything about the books, you'll know what I'm talking about. If you don't, these little creatures that invade your body and take over get planted into your body through this microscopic little seed that floats through the air and lands on your skin and attaches to you. He says anyway that he's in the parking lot of this place and eating his lunch, and the spot that's being described in the story is the exact spot that he's in near Ann Arbor. As he's talking about it in the story, he's listening to it, and what are the chances that he's going to be listening to a story about a place that he's actually at the time when he didn't try to actually intentionally be in that place at that time? I just thought it was really interesting. I've always thought that that cases of synchronicity were always fascinating, because I've had some instances of it in my life, and to know that it's happening with a book, I just thought it was really interesting, because me personally, I love Scott Sigler. I love his work. If you don't know anything about him and you like dark fantasy, horror kind of stuff, go check out scottsigler.com, I believe. I'm not positive. I don't have it open right here, but just Google Scott Sigler and you'll figure it out. Or go to patiobooks.com. I've got a lot of links to his work on the left sidebar of the13skulls.com if you want to check it out there. But anyway, I just thought it was really interesting.
Hey, TJ, what's up? This is Jackie, just calling to congratulate you on 50 episodes. 50? What? That's awesome. I'll be here for the next 50, 50 after that. Great job. Awesome show. Big shout out to Miles, Shannon, Lobo, Brent, and Callie. Love you guys. TJ, what can I say? You are awesomely awesome. That's it. Bye.
Oh, thank you, Jackie. I really appreciate that. You're awesomely awesome, too. You'll only know if you've been around on Facebook and seen those conversations. But thank you, Jackie. I really appreciate it. Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at was an email that I received from Marie. She says, "Hi, TJ. My name's Marie. First, I wanted to praise your show. It's most likely the best out there, which I really appreciate. I can't say that for myself. I'm a little too modest and humble for that. But I really appreciate you thinking that and saying that. It warms the cockles of my heart. I really appreciate it. And get your mind out of the gutter. Whenever I said cockles, it doesn't mean anything bad. All of my life, I've been very interested in the paranormal. I've listened to and read just about everything. I engage in the occasional conversation with the odd strange people I run into on the bus or the train, whoever and whatever I can learn from. And once I was introduced to podcasts, I listened to just about every paranormal show I can find. I found Jim Harold's podcast, Paranormal Podcast, which is fantastic, and it really is. You should go check him out. I believe it's at paranormalpodcast.com. You can just Google Jim Harold or Paranormal Podcast and you'll come across it. But I have to admit, once I heard your show, it became my new favorite. I not only love the content, but also love the sense of community there is among your listeners. Lili Mama is amazing." And yes, she is. Lili Mama is awesome. I love her to death. Haven't heard from her in a while. But if Lili, if you're out there listening, darling, I hope you're doing good. She goes on to say, "I'm so glad she shares her experiences with us. The intricate detail she provides makes for a great learning experience. I'm sending happy thoughts and vibes her way." So after tuning in for about 4 to 5 months, I feel inspired to share some of my experiences, but there's one in particular that happened to Whitley Strieber that I have to tell you about first. I know you share zombie stories on your show that are most likely tongue-in-cheek, which most of the time they really are. I just love the concept of them. But she goes on to say, "I've usually never put much stock into the thought of zombies, but now I may be changing my mind. I feel it's kind of pointless to share stories heard second or third hand, but this one was just really interesting. For Halloween, Whitley Strieber did a special broadcast of his show called Dreamland, where he shared some interesting stories from his past. And apparently, when he was in his early 20s and living in New York, he came face to face with the Walking Dead. He says, as he was sitting in his apartment one night, he heard a persistent scraping sound coming from the apartment below him. Tired of what it was, he got up, left his apartment, and went to the common stairway to look down to the next floor. He says what came into view shortly after was something he had never seen before or since. A man came down the hallway wearing nothing but underwear and a white t-shirt. His legs and arms were extremely skinny, almost skeleton-like. His eyes were sunken and his lips were peeled back off of his teeth. In Whitley's words, he looked exactly like a corpse that was about 6 weeks old. His legs and knees seemed to be so stiff that in order for him to move, he had to thrust his torso forward, causing the rest of his body to follow as if he was thrusting his legs out in front of him one at a time. At this moment, the process of him moving created the scraping sound that Whitley had heard echoing through the hall. Now, when the man saw Whitley standing there, the whole process sped up and the man started coming towards him quickly. Whitley thought to himself, "My God," and ran back to his apartment, slammed the door, and locked the locks. He had told his girlfriend, who had been with him in the apartment that night, that there's something out there. His girlfriend said, "What do you mean?" Whitley said, "I don't know, just something's out there." And after a short while, they heard a sound like something swishing against the door, almost like the sound of something rubbing their clothes against the door. Whitley quickly peeked behind the keyhole. He didn't see much, but he knew the man was out there, just kind of pacing in front of the door. He said if he had a shotgun, he would have shot through the door. And that was just how frightened he was. After a while, the man went away, but he and his girlfriend didn't dare to leave the apartment until the next morning. The next day, Whitley, being the no-nonsense pragmatist that he is, said he was going to get to the bottom of this and phone the landlord to complain. The landlord told him that there was no one living in the apartment and that it was empty. Whitley said, "Oh no, it isn't. There's a weirdo living down there who walks around in his underwear. The building was rent-controlled and squatters and other people who didn't belong there were common, so it was nothing new to see people being kicked out." So the landlord said he would look into it. Before long, there were workmen in the apartment cleaning it out and taking down plywood that had been put up on the windows. Whitley walked in and chatted with one of the workmen, asking if they had found the guy that had been living there. They informed him that no one had been in there. When they came in, they found the place totally empty and completely boarded up. So, Whitley thought to himself, "Well, good, the guy's gone and I don't have to worry about it anymore." He ended the story by saying that even to this day, he still doesn't quite believe the idea of zombies, but in his life, he learned that any darn thing can be true. This story just blew my socks off. The Halloween special is still accessible in the Dreamland section of his website, but you may need to be a member to access it, and I believe it does cost a monthly fee. But if anyone can get it or access it, it's an amazing story in his own words. Thank you, TJ, and I'll try to send my story off to you for the next show. Keep up the great work. Sincerely, Marie. Now, Marie, thank you greatly. I truly, really do appreciate you sending that in, and I would love to hear your own personal stories as well. Now, I tried to download the audio that Marie had sent me of the show, but for some reason, I couldn't download it. I don't know why, because Gmail, which I use, would let me listen to it, but it wouldn't let me download it. Every time I tried to download it, it would give me this really quick download, and there wouldn't be anything there. It would tell me that it would, but it wouldn't work, but yet, in Gmail, if you don't have Gmail, you can not only download an audio file that's sent to you, but you can play it through Gmail. For some reason, it wouldn't let me do it, so I couldn't play the audio for you guys. I wanted to, but I couldn't. It was about 38 minutes long, so, you know, if I can post a link up to it, I will. If I can post the audio to it, I will, but for some reason, I can't download it. Regardless of that, Marie, thank you very much. I truly appreciate you writing in.
TJ, Calypso Waxed. I'd like to throw out my congrats on hitting your 50th, and I hope the show keeps going for a lot longer. Anyway, talk to you later, and hope you have a good show lined up. Bye.
Well, thank you, Calypso. I really appreciate you calling in, man. Thank you for the wishes, you guys, the congrats. Thank you greatly for all of those. To those of you who have called in, Jackie, Calypso, Lobo, Shannon, I know you guys have all called in. You guys haven't heard those yet, but, you know, we'll get to them. I truly appreciate the support that all of you guys have shown me through the past 50 episodes. You guys have been fantastic listeners, fantastic friends, fantastic fans, and just great people in general, and I really, truly do appreciate it.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, 13 Skulls. Happy 50th birthday to you. And congratulations on getting the senior discounts now. Peace out from the D. Take care. This is Rojan. Peace.
Rojan, man. Senior discount, yeah, I guess it is over 50, so we're kind of going down that downhill slide towards death. No, hopefully the show won't die. But I really do appreciate you guys calling in. You guys are awesome. And, you know, the support that you guys have shown me is just fantastic.
TJ, my brother in the South. This is Lobo. It is your 50th episode coming up. Yeah. Congratulations, brother man. I'm proud of you. And I will support you until the teeth of hell drag me. Take it easy, brother. Congratulations again for doing an awesome job. And keeping all of us freakazoids salivating, waiting for your show to come out. Take it easy, brother. Peace.
Thank you, Lobo, man. I really do appreciate it. The teeth of hell, huh? That's awesome, man. And salivating listeners, that is what I want. I want you guys to be chomping at the bit for the next show to come out. I really do. I love the fact that you guys enjoy the show. You know, there's one thing to be said for, you know, wanting the acknowledgement of having a great podcast or a good podcast, decent podcast or whatever. You know, to know that you guys enjoy it gives me the biggest amount of satisfaction that I could get. Thank you very much, Lobo. Shannon, Rojan, Jackie, Calypso, everybody, I really do appreciate you calling in. It means the world to me that you guys would support this endeavor that I've been trying to take on here.
TJ, brother, this is Lobo. What's going on, man? Told you a little while ago that I'd call in and give you an experience. See, it happened in 1989, I believe was the year. It was the middle of the summer, and the area that I live in, you know, it's New England, so it's late at night, you know, not late into the evening in the middle of summer. So I was sitting out front my house with my neighbor. She was a couple years younger than me. We were just sitting outside and we were talking, and she went inside and I just sat outside staring out into the horizon. And it was almost dusk. And out of nowhere, this, for lack of a better term, ball of orange light. It was huge. From where I was sitting, this was in the sky, from where I was sitting, it looked like it was about the size of a greyhound bus, not the dog. And it tracked across the skyline, right above the horizon, real slow-like, and then just took off, like I don't know, the fastest thing I ever saw. It's not like it was I've seen shooting stars, and I've seen meteors, and they usually have a pretty set rate of speed. This thing was going slow, and then like a bat out of hell, it was taking off. And it's funny because as this thing passed, all of a sudden I realized it was like a half an hour or more later as I was watching this thing go by. And the girl come outside and she asked me what I had been doing for the last half hour, and I couldn't tell you. I was just transfixed by this thing. And knowing how much of a geek slash dork I am, as you know, I went down to the library. I looked at microfiche. I looked at newspapers for that time period. Nothing. Nobody. It wasn't in the newspaper. Nothing. But I do know that a couple other people had seen the same exact thing. One of them was in North Carolina, and the other one was a couple of towns over from me. They saw the same exact thing on the same exact day, and I'm telling you, it was huge, and I'll never forget that color. It was like a color orange I have never seen before, and I mean, I've seen colors all the way from, you know, pale orange all the way up to like hazmat suit orange. And this was, I don't know, it had like a shimmery, pearly color mixed in with the orange. But man, half an hour gone. And I know all about missing time as far as like being all screwed up. But man, I was straighter than an arrow at that point. And holy crud. I've seen unidentified flying objects. I'm not going to say it was a ship or a craft or anything like that, but I have seen numerous ones. Not too far from my house, there's a hot spot. I mean, radios would go out, the lights in the car would go out, total electrical failure, total engine failure. There's a high tension line, and you could see things over the high tension lines, tracking the lines. I mean, I've seen a lot of weird stuff, but man, that thing, to this day, I mean, I get the jibblies from it, and it's just, woo, just because of that 30 minutes gone, and I mean, and the fact that only three of the people I've talked to have seen it. I mean, it could have been anything. It probably could have been a, you know, a comet or a meteor, but that son of a bitch was huge. I mean, huge. And when I say greyhound, I mean all, from where I was sitting, it was gigantic. You know, just the movement alone, from going slow to this rapid, I mean, like, I don't know, it's like watching a vet off the line just slowly toying with you and then gone. I don't know, bro. But I told you I'd call in. I know it's nothing earth-shattering, but it's still, you know, I guess if you're involved with the paranormal, you're bound to see something at some point that's just outside of the realm of spirituality, I suppose. You know, I can't say that it moved with intelligence. I don't know. But, man, I'll never forget that. Well, I've burned up enough of your time, brother. Thanks for considering the call. Take care. Peace.
Wow, Lobo, man, I really appreciate you calling in, man. That was quite an interesting story and reminds me of something I heard on another podcast about somebody seeing almost the exact same thing. As far as it being the size of a Greyhound bus, man, that is huge. I mean, yeah, it's not a mile-long craft seen in the sky or something, but it's still really wild that it took off as fast as what it did and had those colors to them. Now, I've had some instances where I've seen something and then heard that somebody else saw it too, so it kind of takes away that whole mass hallucination thing where there's more than one person who saw the same thing that really wasn't there. So I believe that you saw what you saw. As far as the missing time goes, you know, there's been certain times where I've looked at the clock and it's been, you know, let's just for an easy math, it's been 12 o'clock. And then, you know, it feels like it's been 10 minutes. You look at the clock and it's been an hour. And it's really hard to explain whether or not that's just you losing track of time or if there really is something else going on there. It makes me wonder if those other people that have seen it had that same experience of losing time. And it also kind of makes me wonder why your neighbor, you know, she thought maybe you'd gone inside or something. Maybe she just didn't realize you were still out there. But it makes me wonder why she didn't come out and check on you for that half an hour and that she came out and checked on you just after it had gone away. I just thought it was really, really wild that the timing on that was so, I don't want to say precise, but it was kind of spot on as far as she goes inside, you see it, and then she comes back out after it's gone. And almost precisely when she leaves, it appears, and when it leaves, she appears. Do you know if there's anything in your town as far as limestone deposits or anything along those lines? You did say that it was a hot spot, so I'm wondering, you know, what other kind of stuff people are seeing where you're living at, man? But regardless of that, Lobo, man, I really appreciate you sharing your experience. That it means the world to me that you would call in and share what you've been through. Granted, like you said, it wasn't earth-shattering, but it was still a very fascinating story for me because I love hearing experiences that people have had. Recently in the news, they were talking about how space debris, I believe, is the cause for ball lightning. I don't know about that because I've heard instances of people experiencing ball lightning that is inside their house. It could be due to high electrical fields in that area, high static electricity, something along those lines for that. But what you saw and some of the things that I've seen, I don't quite think are the case for ball lightning or space junk for that matter. I don't know. It was really fascinating, Lobo, and I really appreciate you calling in, man. Thank you very, very much. I really enjoyed hearing that story. Now, there's something that I wanted to take a look at. It's courtesy of YouTube. It's a Nellis Air Force Base commander denies anything about UFOs whatsoever. So this video is about almost 11 minutes long. So what I'm going to play for you is just a very small chunk of this conversation. This Air Force commander is very persistent with his denying of anything to do with aliens in Area 51. The guy who's interviewing him wants to talk about this kind of stuff, and the guy just straight denies it all. So let's take a listen to that, and I'll be back in just a moment.
In this country, the conservative camp, or the quote vast right-wing conspiracy, if you want to call it, are very concerned about what's happening at Area 51, the Groom Lake facility. Does the Groom Lake facility exist?
The Air Force has acknowledged the existence of an operating location near Groom Lake. The Secretary of the Air Force, though, has reviewed the nature of that installation and its classification and determined that the classification of it is proper.
It is proper, but for the safety and security of the people of the United States and anyone going up on Whitesides and the Freedom Ridge, is there any reason why they would be not safe if they went up there now?
Again, much of the rangeland that we have here is a safety and security buffer. The lines are drawn this way in order to provide both public safety when we're dropping live munitions, as well as security for the classified tactics and other things we might be developing on the ranch.
There has been a number of individuals who have gone to hospitals claiming injuries or diseases or great trauma and stress as a result of having worked out at the Area 51 or or Groom Lake facility. And yet the Supreme Court just days ago has denied their claim to any remuneration for injuries done to them. Some people have said they've been discarded like toilet paper and simply flushed away. What is the Air Force's concern about these individuals now?
The Air Force is proud of its environmental and occupational health and safety record. We are, like the rest of the federal government, subject to public law and public oversight. The National Environmental Policy Act and the Resources Reclamation and Conservation Act, RIPRA, spell out certain codes that we have to comply with. All of our activities on the range are inspected by the EPA and state regulators.
Yes, but these individuals have claimed injury, and one individual has something like scales on them, and they claim to be dying. And yet, if you were concerned about that, what have you done about that?
Well, it's not my job to do anything in particular about any of that. I have no personal knowledge of these cases. But again, the Secretary of the Air Force has reviewed this information carefully and determined that the classification of it is important and right.
Well, that might be classified as to how they got into the condition they got. Have you been using bacteriological, chemical, or biological warfare weaponry on this range which could have caused that damage to those people?
Again, information related to that facility is merely limited to the acknowledgement of an operating location near Groom Lake. Other information associated with that is classified.
Discussion about the existence of anti-gravitational flying discs. Some people talk about them coming from outer space. Others say that they have been manufactured here in the United States for the purpose of creating an illusion of an attack from space, like in H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. In other words, to create a panic project to frighten the public and get them to surrender their rights for a global government. Do you now, or have you ever, tested anti-gravitational flying discs on the Nellis Air Force Range, either at the S-4 area, 9 miles south of the Groom Lake facility, or out of the Groom Lake facility, or any other base within the Nellis Range?
My responsibilities as the Nellis Range Commander are to ensure that we provide a good training environment for development of new aircraft, such as the F-22, the B-2, and older aircraft such as the F-15, where we develop tactics and modify tactics on a periodic basis.
Would that include the Aurora?
Once these aircraft, such as the F-22 and the F-15, come into the inventory, we have a responsibility to train these aircrews. So we use the range as a training ground for F-15, F-16, F-22, someday, pilots, to be able to develop their tactics and train for large-scale military operations to defend the interests of the United States and its citizens abroad.
But in answer to my question, which you did not answer, have you now or ever had knowledge or been engaged in testing of anti-gravitational flying discs within the Nellis range that we're taking a look at here and now?
That certainly doesn't fall within my scope of responsibility.
So are you saying that you have not?
I have no personal knowledge of anything like that.
Have you been at the Groom Lake facility?
Again, when it comes to Groom Lake, we can officially acknowledge its existence, but beyond that, the information regarding it is classified.
But have you? That wouldn't be classified if I simply asked Commander Bill Percival if you have been at the Groom Lake range.
Again, the Air Force has strictly limited the scope of its comments on the facility near Groom Lake to only its existence. And any other information is classified. It's been reviewed by the Secretary of the Air Force and determined that that classification is correct.
Then am I correct in saying that it is classified? You cannot tell me whether you have been on the range or not.
Sir, I can't tell you any more than I've already told you.
Well, the audio for this was a bit bad. From my understanding, this is quite the old video. It doesn't really give a whole lot of detail as far as when the video was created. I want to say I think it was in the 90s, but I'm not exactly positive. But go watch this video. I just thought it was really, really wild that this guy is straight up denying anything to do with the circumstances surrounding Area 51 and the possibility of anything outside of the ordinary going on there.
So, what do you think?
It's beautiful, James. But I'm still not 100% on this whole outdoorsy thing.
You know, there's nobody else out here from Mars.
If you want us to work, then you're just gonna listen.
We are not having this discussion out here, alright? That's all of them, babe.
Wait, go back.
That's just one of them yowies.
Yowie?
It's like an ape man. You know, the US, they have Bigfoot, and legend has it, we have the yowie.
None of those are real.
It's just probably a bunch of teenagers messing around then.
It just seems like a lot of work for a practical joke.
I've heard of sightings around these parts, but no proof. There's the odd mutilated cow, and some wacko reckons he saw a giant footprint.
Oh my god.
Oh my god, Viv, you're right?
We need to go to the police.
Viv, where are you going? Viv, open the door!
We're in the middle of nowhere. We should go before...
Before what? Give me
it! Nah, it's just hype. You know, brings in the tourists.
No, the promo that you just heard just now was the official trailer for the movie Yowie. Deep in the Australian bush, a young couple noticed a strange creature captured in one of their photos, a creature thought to be a myth. The Yowie, or Bigfoot, Yeti, the abominable snowman. This is the official trailer for a final film at a university that someone created. So it's more of an independent film. You know, it doesn't look to be a high-cost blockbuster film, but it looks like it's fairly well done for an independent movie. I haven't seen it yet, but I think I might check it out. If anybody's seen the movie, let me know. If there's anybody listening in Australia and you've seen the movie Yowie, let me know. If there's anybody anywhere in the world that has seen this movie Yowie, let me know. I'd love to see it, but I'll post a link up there so you guys can actually go watch the trailer yourself and let me know what you think about Yowie or if you've seen it at all. All right, well, you know what? We're going on a little bit here. Let's go ahead and take a little bit of a break. And when we get back, we've got an army of rats that's invading a village every 50 years, the Mackenzie Poltergeist, which is a very odd story, a ghost that was captured on camera in Kuala Lumpur, and a sketch of King Richard II's skull has been found in the basement of a museum. That a lot more coming up in this 50th episode, so you guys just stay put, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Eerie Radio, opening the door to the unknown. Download episodes of Eerie Radio directly from iTunes or visit their website at www.eerieradio.com.
At this hour, they report the level of the mysterious radiation continues to increase steadily. So long as this situation remains, government spokesmen warn that dead bodies will continue to be transformed into the flesh-eating ghouls. All persons who die during this crisis, from whatever cause, will come back to life to seek human victims unless their bodies are first disposed of by cremation.
Are you ready for the zombie apocalypse? Maybe you should check out the Zombie Research Society. Founded in 2007, the Zombie Research Society is dedicated to raising zombie awareness in the fields of science, survival, and culture. Become a member of ZRS and let your voice be heard. The life you save could be your own. Remember, what you don't know can eat you.
Log in to zombieresearch.org for more information.
There was a time, not so very long ago, when there was a very clear difference between life and death. Those days are gone. All that remains are a handful of survivors, with no clear direction but to survive and piece together the last remnants of society. The last remaining vestige. Vestige, an original audio drama brought to you by Jagged Edge Media. Coming October of 2010. www.fromtheedgepodcast.com.
All right, welcome back. The next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of news.bbc.co.uk, and apparently an army of rats so big and so mythical that until now scientists didn't believe was real is invading a village every 50 years. The explosion of rodent population leading to swarms of the hungry pest is caused by a glut in the food supply, namely bamboo seeds. And it is a perfect example of how a simple relationship between two apparently innocuous species, a tall grass and a tiny rodent, can turn the ecology of a whole region upside down, wiping out wildlife, destroying agriculture, and leaving people destitute. And what's even worse, scientists suspect that the climate change may create even bigger rat armies in the future. Approximately every 50 years, the carpet of the forest dies off, and this increases the bamboo's growth rate, which increases the seed, which increases the population of the rats. The big problem for the local farmers is their low-growing rice crops make easy pickings for the rats. Between June and September 2009, community rat collection campaigns in the region collected more than 2.6 million rats. There are some people in the world that consider rats to be a delicacy, but I don't believe so here. Maybe. I mean, you could feed a lot of people with rats. They're not exactly the cleanest animals in the world, but I think if you cook them correctly, get them to a high enough temperature to kill off all the bacteria, you should be able to. But there's quite a bit more to this article there. I just thought it was really, really wild that within just 50 to 60 days, these rats from birth can reach a sexual maturity rate and start reproducing themselves. So you get, 2.6 million rats in just 1 year. That's a lot. That's a whole lot. And for them to invade one small town, yeah, I can see how it definitely would leave you destitute and start overrunning things and just, be a swarm of rats. I just thought it was really wild that it happens once every 50 years. I would think that it would happen, more often than that, but I just thought it was really, really wild. So let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of AOLnews.com. And it's extraterrestrial life is supposed to be revealed at a Ramada Inn. A Michigan man claiming to possess an ice meteorite rich in extraterrestrial organisms will announce in a news conference, which was supposed to be sometime this week, but I didn't hear anything about it. It was supposed to be in Ramada Inn in South Haven, Michigan, that he was supposed to reveal this. In March of 2000, Dwayne P. Snyder, who's 65, said that he prayed to Jesus to send him an ice meteorite because he knew it would be quite valuable. And he noticed several chunks of the ice near his home on a road. Since it hadn't snowed in weeks, he deduced that the ice must have been the meteorite that he was praying for. After gathering up a few pieces and stashing them in his freezer, he spent the next 10 years trying to convince scientists to analyze the frozen mass. But I would think at this point, if you had had it for 10 years, it would have grown some kind of bacteria or something, even in the freezer, because it doesn't hit absolute zero. So there are things that can live in a freezer, even though we use them to freeze stuff. There's still stuff that can live in that environment. Plus, I would think that if you have it in a freezer, you're going to put other things in there with it, which are probably going to contaminate it whenever it comes in contact with something that is going to be coming in contact with that frozen meteorite that you have. But he says that he received very little interest from the scientific community. He has paid to have chemical analysis performed by two commercial laboratories. What the laboratories found were that the samples contained particles with unique molecular structures, convinced Snyder that he indeed had in possession alien life forms. Now, there's a little bit more to this article there that you can go and take a look at, but this goes along with what NASA was supposed to have done earlier this week. Now, there were some people that were saying that NASA was going to say that they had found alien life. NASA was kind of saying that they had found something that was not of this Earth. But really what they found was something that gives us a more reliable... Well, not reliable, but lets us think that there's a possibility for life out there more so than what we already thought. NASA said that they found a life form that, when exposed to arsenic, increases, it almost lives off of arsenic like what we live off of water and air. And so it's not really something that is alien so much as it is something that gives us a little bit more hope that life can survive in a climate that we cannot survive in. So if you had a planet that was covered in arsenic, this creature, this I'm not even sure what it was, to be completely honest with you. I keep hearing things from different places that it was a plant. Some places are saying that it was like a virus. Some places are saying that it was some kind of a single cell organism. Some was saying it was like a mold. But I'm not really sure exactly what it was. They found it in a lake, and whenever they exposed it to arsenic, it grew instead of dying like anything else. If you were to give a human some arsenic, you would die. But anyway, this guy who found the meteorite said that he was going to have it, you know, analyzed and did. The scientist said that he had found some kind of a life form, but you can go to snyderachrite.com, and I think I'm saying that correctly, but it's SnyderIcyRite.com, where people can purchase the lab reports and photos of the particles. He issued a press release under the headline "Ice Meteorite Found with Extraterrestrial Life Forms," in which he received worldwide distribution. And according to Snyder, media outlets from Germany, Mexico, and Sweden planned to cover the story. I haven't seen anything else about this, so if anybody else has heard about it, let me know. I've looked around and couldn't find anything about this. There is the link to the PRNewsWire.com press release that he had, but it doesn't really give you anything. I mean, there's a little bit there to it, but basically what it says is that he will announce it, and there you go. But I don't see anything about what it actually was or anything along those lines. So if anybody does, let me know. The next article is courtesy of en.ryan.ru, and it's a monument to perished aliens may go up in a Ukrainian town. Now, this article was sent to me by Rojan Man. I really appreciate you sending this to me. There's a video there that you guys can go and watch, and apparently a group of UFO researchers from the northern Ukrainian town of Berdichev, I could be pronouncing that wrong, is set to build a monument in the memory of aliens who died trying to establish contact with humans. The Berdichev Delovy newspaper quoted the group's leader, Alexander Nalisman, as saying that contacts with alien civilizations were an undisputable fact. Many visitors from space died as their flying saucers crashed while attempting to land on Earth. "We don't pay enough attention to the fates of the visitors from other planets who died on the Earth," he said. The project, however, lacks funding and is yet to receive approval from local authorities. One of the most enduring legends is the UFO lore of the Roswell incident. There's a video there that you guys can go and watch. It's about 24 seconds long of a UFO, what sounds like gunfire going off while this UFO is hovering above the cameraman. I don't know much about it. There doesn't seem to be anything there other than it's a triangle UFO, and there seems to be a lot of crackling and popping going off in the background as if someone is shooting at it. So apparently they are going to make a monument to dead aliens that tried to land on Earth, but they crashed. They don't have the funding for it. Anyway, I found it to be a fascinating article. Thank you, Rogan, for sending that in. I really, truly do appreciate it. Let's go ahead and move on to the next thing that I wanted to take a look at, which is courtesy of EdinburghNotes.com, YouTube, and Wikipedia. And it's about the McKenzie poltergeist. Now, some people are going to say that a poltergeist is nothing more than energy that someone is putting out on their own unintentionally, such as a young girl or a young boy going through puberty. Apparently, it happens more with young girls than it does young boys, but it's not necessarily a ghost, according to some people, but in Edinburgh, they're saying that this unfriendly spook is said to haunt the Covenanters' prison in Greyfriars Cemetery. George Mackenzie was in charge of the prison in the 17th century and working for King Charles II, who persecuted the Scots Presbyterians known as the Covenanters. Mackenzie was also a local advocate and became infamous for the glee with which he would sentence the Covenanters to swing on the gallows. He was most definitely called a hanging judge. Mackenzie's tomb is near the site of the prison. However, this is not where the poltergeist activity takes place. It seems that the ghostly judge prefers to haunt the last resting place of his victims within the prison. The area has been the site of much paranormal activity and ghost sightings over the century, but the poltergeist has become one of the more active of the incidents which occur here at this prison. There is a little bit more there to the Greyfriars, which is situated in East Oxford. It's one of the smallest constituent halls of the University of Oxford in England, and its previous status as a permanent private hall referred to the fact that it was governed by an outside institution rather than by its fellows as a college. Greyfriars had undoubtedly been one of the most distinctive buildings in Oxford. This is where that guy had been a part of. And there's a little bit of a YouTube video here. It's about 9 minutes long, and I just wanted to play a little bit of it for you to kind of give you an idea of what's going on.
At the heart of Edinburgh City is Greyfriars Church and Cemetery. But what many visitors don't realize is that it hides one of Britain's most horrific sites of human cruelty.
The Covenanters' prison was the first recorded concentration camp in the mid-1600s. 1,200 Scottish Presbyterians were kept here by the government. Most of them died, and you could say that they were the lucky ones because the conditions in here were appalling.
Upon his death, the infamous George Mackenzie was then buried in Greyfriars, as if standing guard over the helpless souls that he persecuted in life. You would think that Greyfriars Cemetery would be the last place even a vagrant would wish to spend the night. But when you're homeless, cold and wet, even the sealed tomb of George Mackenzie might seem welcome refuge. The tomb may have protected the vagrant from the elements, but did it expose him to something much more sinister? Was something now unleashed?
People believe the vagrant disturbed something in George Mackenzie's tomb, and that became the Mackenzie poltergeist. That's why it's got the name. The attacks on people began 2 days after this guy broke into the tomb. It seems like George Mackenzie is once again inflicting his tyranny on the living, just like he did centuries ago.
The belief that Greyfriars is haunted by an entity is one shared by many of its visitors.
It was a smell like rotting flesh.
You just want to get out, and you realise you have to get out. You get assaulted by something that you don't see, you don't feel.
Absolutely no idea what happened to me.
There have now been over 500 recorded poltergeist attacks in this area. That's just the recorded ones. We don't know how many have occurred that have not been reported. The attacks take the form of people being cut, bitten, bruised, scratched, burned. One of the most common occurrences is that people collapse. Over 180 people, since the occurrence started, have fallen unconscious in this area. It's like this thing is a predator. Attack isn't too strong a word, that's what it does. It attacks you.
It's just kind of creepy. It's actually a place that I really want to visit, but you know, I'm gonna have to go over there one day. So Miles and S, you guys are gonna have to show me around if and when I ever make it over across the pond. The next thing that I wanted to take a look at, now I'll post a link up to all this stuff so you guys can go take a look at it. The next article that I wanted to look at, it really isn't an article, I guess. It's just something that I found that I thought was really interesting, given that the holidays are coming around. You know, for those of you who celebrate Christmas, this would be something that you could hang on your tree. It's courtesy of Cryptomundo.com, and they are Bigfoot or Abominable Snowman glass ornaments for your holiday tree. It supports the International Cryptozoology Museum. So basically, if you make a donation, they send one to you. They have a silver one, a white one, and like a brownish black one. They've just arrived. You can pick them up using PayPal. You know, just make a donation to them and you'll get one of them. They also have another one that's called a Garden Yeti. And basically, it looks like a Bigfoot turning around and looking at you, but he's got a little red Santa's hat on with Christmas lights wrapped around his shoulder. You can also get this little weird keychain thing that is just like a little furry Bigfoot smiling at you. The Kwatchi keychain can be used as a Christmas ornament, but you can also put it on your keychain. But anyway, if you don't go take a look at them, it's just really funny. All right, well, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of thetruthbehindthescenes.wordpress.com, and it's what's said to be a ghost that has been captured in a picture in Taman Lompu in Kuala Lumpur. On November 6th of this year, Marnie Davies visited Taman Lompu Recreation Park in Kuala Lumpur, where she took some pictures with her cell phone around 12:30 a.m. The pictures were uploaded to her computer. She saw the strange figure in one of the pictures, and she's wondering if it's just a reflection, or if it's a ghost, or if it's someone just walking by. Now, there's nothing more to it there. You can click on the pictures to enlarge them, and basically what you'll see is it looks like she's kind of high up and overlooking maybe a little bit of a town or, you know, a park of some kind. It's fairly large. She's up on a hill. It looks like there are trees that are covered in like Christmas lights, for a lack of a better way to describe them. It looks like a woman in white with black flowing hair that's like as if she's moving, or as if the wind is blowing her hair. It's really quite an odd picture. You can't really make out anything as far as details. Now, everything in the picture, as far as the lights go, don't have trails behind them, so it looks like the camera was fairly steady when the picture was taken, but the woman or the ghost or the reflection, whatever it is, looks to be fairly blurred. Like, it's not as clear as everything else. It doesn't look to be faked. It just looks like you can't really tell what it is. Maybe it looks like somebody just walking by. That's why they're a little bit more blurry than everything else. But anyway, I just thought it was quite an odd picture. So go take a look at it and let me know what you think about the ghost in Kuala Lumpur. All right, well, the next thing that I found was just fascinating. It's courtesy of philipcoppins.com. This goes along perfectly with the show. It goes along perfectly with the reason for the show. It goes along perfectly for what I named the 13 skulls. Apparently, a new crystal skull has been discovered. A new ancient crystal skull. The Mitchell Hedges skull is no longer unique. Out of Africa, by the way of California, emerges another ancient skull. Quote-unquote, Compassion has a detachable jaw. And already, the skull is recarving the crystal skull landscape. This is a really long article, but basically they have found apparently a new ancient crystal skull that they can't really determine how it was made, that is like the Mitchell Hedges skull in the fact that it has a detachable jaw that was made from the same piece of crystal as the rest of the skull. And it's carved across the grain, which is a little bit hard to do without actually shattering, breaking, or just destroying the quartz. Compassion is human-sized, and it's clear. It is made of quartz. It's 5.5 inches tall, 5.5 inches wide, and 8 inches long, weighing around 11 pounds. Very similar dimensions to the Mitchell Hedges skull. The mouth has 28 teeth, and as little is known about the origin of this skull. It was in storage in the United States 5 years prior to a shop putting it up for sale. It had spent 22 years in a warehouse in Africa. The name of the people who owned it in Africa is not a matter of public record, so no one knows. But initial analysis of the skull have shown that the crystal is not from Brazil. Gerald Leandro de Souza argues that quartz probably is from Africa. The likeliest source is Namibia. There is a fissure inside this crystal skull that has some iron oxide on the inside of it. The material inside the fissure was rust. The conclusion was confirmed when someone took the skull, examined it. Scientists are saying that it was created by hand and not a machine. One area of the skull shows a pie-shaped area in which the carver would have kept a grinding wheel, but it was there's a whole lot more to this article there. There's a lot of reds and yellows and blues and stuff inside this fissure, inside this skull. It's really quite a pretty skull. You should go take a look at it. It's really not typical skull in the fact that it's just solid, clear crystal. Now, most of the skull is clear, but this fissure on the back of the skull is just really quite odd because it varies in color all the way across the spectrum from red to blues and purple. So you guys go take a look at the new ancient crystal skull that's been discovered. That really, I guess you can't really quite call it new because it's ancient. But anyway, it's just a strange thing there between new and ancient. Let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of guardian.co.tt. And there's been a panic that's broke out in a Moruga composite school as 17 female students fell mysteriously ill and began rolling around on the ground, hissing and blabbering in a strange tongue after suffering bouts of nausea and headaches. Two of the students reportedly tried to throw themselves off a railing and had to be physically restrained, triggering fears of a possible demon attack. The drama started during the lunch hour in the Form 1 block and quickly spread to other areas. A lot of the girls were said to be rolling around with their eyes and, you know, rolled up into their heads and beating on the ground. With the assistance of students and teachers, the pupils were taken to the multipurpose hall where some of them fell into a semi-conscious state. A lot of the girls were blabbering in an unknown tongue, just like gibberish, not knowing what was going on. The girls were unusually strong and said that it was really hard for them to hold them down and that they eventually were starting to hurt themselves. There's quite a bit more to this article there for you guys to go take a look at as far as the details as to who it was and what happened. There's really not much more in detail as to what exactly happened other than the fact that the kids are okay now. The Princetown Health Facility where they were medically examined said that they really weren't sure what the problem was, but the girls seem to be fine now. The students, pupils, I don't know, they basically made a letter to believe that it was 16 or 17 girls that this happened to. Let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of LiveScience.com. And basically, precognition is something that actually is a possibility, according to scientists. The idea of studying whether people can see the future is usually dismissed outright by all of the fringes of parapsychologists, but an upcoming paper to be published in a well-respected journal finds small but statistically significant evidence that people's behavior can be influenced by things that haven't happened yet. Not necessarily precognition in the way that you would think that you're predicting the future or seeing the future or anything like this. New Scientist reports that the study is the culmination of 8 years of work by Cornell University psychologist Daryl Bim. More than 1,000 student volunteers participated in experiments that reversed well-known psychological phenomena. For example, many students have found that people are slower to decide a picture is pleasant if they've seen a negative word right before looking at the picture. So someone reading the word ugly before seeing a picture of a lovely sunset will be slower to call the picture pretty than someone who just read the word beautiful. This phenomenon is called priming. Bim reversed the experiment, presenting the picture, then the response, and finally the priming word. And what do you know? He found something that looked very much like retroactive priming, in which people who would eventually be shown negative words were slower to say positive things about the pictures. The size of the seeming precognition effects is small, but only slightly greater than chance. Fellow psychologists are saying the methods hold up to scrutiny. What they're saying is that if you were to see a pretty sunset and there was a word there that you couldn't see, let's say that it was just blocked and you couldn't see it. You saw a picture and then you saw the word ugly. Well, before you saw the word ugly, you would already be thinking about the word ugly while you're looking at the sunset. Anyway, I just thought it was pretty wild that they're doing this kind of study and that precognition, at least to some degree, is actually possible. Well, guys, let's go ahead and take a little bit of a break here. We've got a lot more stuff to cover before this show is over. This might have to be broken into two episodes. I'm not really sure, but let's go ahead and take a break here and we'll be back in just a minute.